Spirit Blade Underground, episode 376. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 376.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and like me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. Well, first off, guys, I want to apologize for the missing Summer of Free segment in last week's podcast. I think I referred to it in the intro and then again at some point in the outro. And you might have been wondering, I don't remember that Summer of Free business. It completely got left out. I apologize for that. But if you do want that content, you can go and watch it on the YouTube channel because I made a video of that content. So, and that's, you know, even an even better way to engage with that particular content because you can see a little bit of what I'm talking about in the video. So youtube.com/Christian Geek Central is where you can see that last Summer of Free segment for 2015. On the show today, reactions to the pilot for Fear the Walking Dead, which I just watched last night, and a look at the question, can Christians be evil in games, which is actually where we're going to spend most of the time on the podcast today. Before we jump in, I do want to apologize. I originally recorded my reactions to Fear the Walking Dead, the pilot, as a video, so I didn't have my headphones on and didn't notice that a reverb effect that I'd been using earlier in the day was still on. So I recorded that entire thing intending to release it as a video, and in the end, not because of the reverb thing, but just for other reasons, I decided not to release that as a video, but I did keep hold on to the audio to use on the podcast here. So no, it's not me like using reverb to be spooky while talking about a zombie show. I'm just a huge moron, so I'm sorry for that little interesting bit in the audio. It's not a terribly long segment if you find it unsettling. Anyway, here we go. Every now and then people ask me what's on my mind, so I thought I'd take a minute to answer that question. Now, pay attention, please, because I don't think I can do this more than once. All right, this part is my parietal lobe, and if I dig back in here, I can pull out some of my occipital. And I don't know what this part is, but whenever I touch it, I smell peanut butter. Okay, hey, I'm Peter Franson from ChristianGeekCentral.com and Spirit Blade Productions, and I just wanted to give, some reactions to the pilot for Fear the Walking Dead. First off, I'll say that I'm a pretty big Walking Dead fan. I've watched it, you know, from the beginning, and there have been, like, a few, you know, seasons, you know, in the middle that have been a little bit, like, a little bit slow, you know, and so I went away from, you know, keeping up to date weekly with what was going on. But the last season kind of changed that for me. Now I'm back on track with The Walking Dead. It's good enough for me, or I'm enjoying it enough, I should say, that it's really pulling me back on a weekly basis, as opposed to what I had been doing for a couple seasons, which was just waiting for the Blu-ray set to be released each year. And for me, that's a big deal. Like, if I'm actually going to dedicate time to watch a show each week, I'm definitely done with appointment viewing. You know, even the only two shows that I watch weekly now are The Flash, which didn't happen until the last four episodes. Otherwise I was just kind of binge watching as I felt like catching up on a few episodes at a time. So The Flash and then The Walking Dead. Those are the only ones that I'm like, as soon as that episode's available, I'm going to watch it, you know. Because I'm just not into appointment viewing, and I'd much rather just kind of wait until the whole thing's done, and, you know, I'm just, you know, instead of, like, waiting around for cliffhangers and stuff like that. But I do like The Walking Dead enough And I'll tell you why I like The Walking Dead, so you can understand kind of my thoughts and reactions to Fear the Walking Dead. I like it for the same reason I like Battlestar Galactica. You know, I like human drama, and I like character-driven stories, not just concept-driven stories, but very character-driven stories with a lot of emotional weight and stuff. And so, like Battlestar Galactica, the new Battlestar Galactica, and The Walking Dead are very much my cup of tea, but at the same time, I'm a geek, and I don't typically like to watch, you know, heavy drama or stuff like that, or just straight up drama. I need that kind of geek element of sci-fi, fantasy, horror as a backdrop for the human drama. I guess I'm kind of particular in that way. But I'm not into, as much as I am a geek, I'm not into just, usually, like, just straight up, like, lasers blasting and stuff like that. Like, for me, the ideal experience is one that combines my love of geek genres and then also fantastic performances by the actors and character-driven stories. And so, and the same reason I like Farscape. I'm a huge, huge fan of Farscape. But so I wanted to see this, you know, look like, okay, well, more Walking Dead. I'm into that, you know. And if you're in it for more Walking Dead, if you're interested in checking out Fear the Walking Dead because you're just like, hey, I want more Walking Dead, this might not be the show for you. This story takes place just at the beginning of the outbreak, and it looks like they're going to, for who knows how long throughout the course of this series, assuming it continues, it looks like they're going to be focusing on like the initial spread of the virus and how all this, you know, how things came to be, you know, during the period that Rick Grimes, the main character, you know, arguably in the Walking Dead, you know, was in his coma for a while during the pilot of that series. So I think that there are definitely some pros to that approach. First of all, you know, it is something a little bit different, which I think is important. I think at the end of the day, we might think, or at least, you know, I don't know, maybe a lot of people really all they do want is more Walking Dead. But I suspect that if all they gave us was more of the same, that we would kind of like, we wouldn't have the desire for it as much. We wouldn't have the hunger for it as much if we got too much of it or enough of it to satisfy us, you know. And so I think they were wise to kind of say, well, let's do something different with this. The downside is potentially that it's just not going to have, for who knows how long, as much of that horror backdrop as the main Walking Dead series has, if this pilot is any indicator. The performances are great. I'm a little short on time, so I didn't do my research on like the actors' names, but there were definitely some familiar faces, especially the female lead. She was in Gone Girl, and I've just seen her face kind of all over the place, it seems like. And so I'm looking forward to, you know, what she's going to bring to the show, and several other familiar faces. I'm like, okay, yeah, they're bringing in actors with solid track records who probably really have great chops. And so far, I'm very impressed by everybody. You know, so it's the same kind of like caliber of acting that you've come to expect, I think, in the main Walking Dead series. And so that was really encouraging to me. I was also encouraged by the fact that it is clearly going to be this character-driven thing. I mean, this is at the outset here, we've got this family that's an attempt at a blended family, a woman who we don't know, you know, what happened to her husband or the father of her children, but her children are now mostly grown. You've got one that's presumably out of high school and one that's in high school still, and she's got this boyfriend that's kind of moved in with her, and he's got his own family as well, you know, that he's separated from or whatever. So it's this attempt at a blended family, and while the husband and wife, but that's not really what it is. But it's the main couple, the parent figures, I guess you would say, the parents. You could say parents. They each have their own families. The parents here that are together, they seem committed to each other. But it's the dysfunction is in trying to blend their families, and also the fact that the oldest son of the main lady is. Is like a drug addict, and so anyway. But you know, he sees this at the beginning of the pilot. He sees this zombie, you know, this walker, whatever, you know. And over the course of the pilot, you know, we're trying to figure out. He's trying to figure out, was this real? Did I see this? And meanwhile, there's all these other little hints that other similar events are happening elsewhere. But most of this is the problem that I see potentially with doing this kind of story about this part of the outbreak and stuff is that it might take too long. It might take too long to really kind of rev up into... It's not that I want it to get to the place that The Walking Dead is at, where we're in a post-apocalyptic environment and society has completely fallen apart. I'm in no rush to get there, but I just noticed in this pilot that there was a lot... I wish that they would have gotten to a little bit more, like, symptoms of the outbreak and focused a little bit more and on the characters reacting to the signals and signs of the outbreak on its way. Most of this episode was really about just establishing these characters, who they are, and all of their conflicts and problems and hopes and dreams and stuff completely unrelated to the zombie outbreak. And, you know, by the end of this episode, I feel like, okay, so now we're probably, you know, going to be getting into stories that I wish would have this initial story would have been like. But so the pilot is a little bit slow going to get into the zombie stuff. It's very sparing, and for my taste, there's too much teasing going on through this whole episode. You know, of like, oh, is this person a zombie? Or are we getting to the zombie stuff? Oh, not really. And it's just like with music, you know, they're kind of like implying something's about to go down. And then it never really happens, you know. So I feel like this series might have a lot of potential. Certainly just as much potential as The Walking Dead. But this pilot, it just got off to a little bit of a slow start. Again, I don't want them to rush into the zombie apocalypse. But I wish there would have just been a little bit more... going on with the symptoms of the outbreak and stuff like that. So I think that there's probably going to be some, you know, some of the same potential for like worthwhile philosophical and potentially spiritual matters to be kind of played with and examined in this series. They're already setting up some themes of survival and just doing what it takes to survive, you know, and that's one of the main themes of The Walking Dead is, you know, how important is it to survive, and at what point do you cross the line and commit immoral acts in order to survive, and is that ever appropriate? And if it is, then where do you draw the line, you know? And so I think that's one of the main things going on in The Walking Dead, and it's probably going to be something that they focus on here. It'll be interesting, you know, with a title like Fear the Walking Dead, if they are able to kind of create a show here that lives up to that title. I'd be interested in that. I'm not afraid of zombies in The Walking Dead in the same way that I maybe was at the beginning. What I'm afraid of in The Walking Dead is the fact that somebody I care about might die, and they might die horribly. That's what I care about. It's not that like the zombies themselves are terrifying or that people are kind of like living in constant fear and paranoia regarding the zombies. By this point, the main cast in The Walking Dead has kind of adjusted to the fact that they're living in this dark world, and it's just grim, and they're always, you know, a lot of times they're just kind of emotionally flatlined, and maybe they're experiencing grief, but they're not experiencing like this wide-eyed terror and paranoia. And I'm wondering if by going back to tell the story of the initial outbreak and calling the show Fear the Walking Dead, this show will be a little bit more about paranoia and terror and, you know, at the initial onset of the outbreak. And I would be very interested if it was that kind of show and we saw, you know, what was going on as far as like if the human drama used that as the backdrop, which is a bit different than the backdrop of The Walking Dead. So anyway, I see a lot of potential in the show. It's not one that I am going to be watching every week. I mean, I don't have cable to begin with, so like when I watch The Walking Dead, I buy each episode on Amazon. And then in addition to that, I buy the Blu-ray set when it comes out. That's not going to be the case here. I will wait at least for this entire first season of Fear the Walking Dead to come out on Blu-ray. Then I'll probably buy it and see if I want to continue with the series, and I'll probably go season by season at that point. And just kind of like, you know, see how long I want to stick around. So those are my thoughts. I'd love to get your reactions, whether you're a Walking Dead fan or not. Like, if you're not a Walking Dead fan, I'd love to hear from you to see kind of what your perspective is, you know, as far as this goes as an entry point. And if you're a Walking Dead fan, of course, I'd like to hear what you think about this compared to the show, the main show, and your expectations and stuff like that. You can leave those in the comments below. And then I hope you'll sometime come and join us over at ChristianGeekCentral.com as we continue to geek out and seek the truth. I want to remind you guys, go check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, and POS, TOS, all these guys, unique voices, doing stuff that I think is great, but you're not going to hear from me. It's their unique stuff, and it's really great quality. So check them out. For more information about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
The truth will set you free.
Truth is that which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. Now, lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
Today I want to try and answer the question, can Christians be evil in games without sinning? Whether that's tabletop games, you know, like paper and pencil RPGs or video games or whatever. As a geek who loves video games and paper and pencil RPGs and board and card games, you know, I love being the questing hero who saves the world from the forces of evil, but sometimes I like to be the bad guy, you know, sometimes in a humorous mustache-twirling way and sometimes in a dark and seriously disturbing way. In a game of Dungeons & Dragons that I play in every so often, I play an evil wizard who helps others, you know, as part of the group, but really only to grow in power and wealth so that he can eventually conquer the world and see everyone kneel before him. And as the overlord in Descent, you know, I cast evil spells and summon horrific monsters to kill the heroes in my dungeon. In numerous video games, RPGs, you know, like Skyrim or Kingdoms of Amalur Reckoning, I steal from other characters or take assassination contracts. In the Saints Row games, I've committed vehicular homicide more times than I can count. I've increased and controlled a massive crime wave and have even been known to just go downtown and just start destroying nearly everything and everyone in sight. Now, maybe you play games in a similar way from time to time, and maybe you've been accused of sin as a result, or at least asked how you can do these kinds of things and still call yourself a Christian. You know, aren't violent video games just a way for people to live their secret dreams of killing for real? Or don't they at least feed our impulses toward violence and anger, you know? Aren't games that incorporate elements of real-world evil bound to make us interested in evil and pursue evil? So these are the things I'm looking at as I try to answer the question, can Christians be evil in games without sinning? And as always, I want to apologize if you're watching the video and you notice me reading. I just try to collect my thoughts and choose my words more carefully when I'm doing something like this as opposed to just ranting about some video game or something. So I'm entering into this with the assumption that the Bible alone is the highest authority for a Christian. So that's primarily where I'm going to be looking for my answers. Now, I haven't found a single verse in the Bible yet that specifically says that playing an evil character in a game is wrong. I think the real question is whether or not playing games in this way is spiritually healthy or unhealthy, you know? Does it make us better? Does it make us worse or neither? Are we sinning in our hearts as Jesus warned against, despite not truly sinning with our outward actions? I think that's part of some of the concern or among the accusations is, yeah, we know you're not killing a real person, but what's going on in your heart? You know, it seems to be that you want to kill people or that you're angry and hateful or something like that. Now, to start with, we can't logically say that violent and disturbing stories, which we often help create as we play a game, are bad in and of themselves. Just like as a rule, you know, we should throw out anything, any stories or fiction or entertainment that's violent or disturbing. We should just throw those out. We can't logically say that because Jesus told violent and disturbing stories in which people were tortured, killed, and beaten to death with rocks. For your consideration, I would give you Matthew 18:34, Matthew 21:35, and also verses 38 and 39 of that chapter, and Matthew 22, verses 6 and 7. So violent fiction can obviously serve a good purpose. It doesn't necessarily, but it can, is what I'm getting at. And each case should be examined individually rather than throwing them out altogether. Now, some might say that, you know, if it has the appearance of evil, we should avoid it, you know, that phrase, the appearance of evil.
has been quoted to me a few times in my life. But that conclusion really comes from a misunderstanding of 1 Thessalonians 5, verses 21 and 22, which in the ESV says, "But examine everything carefully, which we do want to do. Hold fast to that which is good." Yes, yes. "Abstain from every form of evil." Absolutely. Now, some translations say "appearance of evil" instead of "form of evil." And the word can be translated that way, but "form" is closer to the Greek word eidos, which means appearance, fashion, shape, or sight. So it's not that, you know, we should abstain from anything that looks like evil, that has the appearance of evil, because, I mean, how the heck do you determine that? I have no idea. We should rather abstain from evil, whatever it might look like, whatever form it might take. But, you know, we should determine first whether or not something is actually evil before abstaining from it. Otherwise, we're just going to create a bunch of laws for ourselves, like the Pharisees did, just adding to God's laws and just, you know, giving ourselves over to slavery, you know, enslaving ourselves to man-made laws. So some might use Philippians 4:8 as an argument against enjoying any entertainment that isn't, you know, like constantly smiles and rainbows and family-friendly and, you know, all those kinds of things. Philippians 4:8 says, "Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there's any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things." Now, first of all, even in dark, disturbing fiction, there is much of artistic excellence. And artistic excellence is worth praising. We shouldn't assume that because something is dark and disturbing or even promotes ideas that are counter to Scripture, that there are none of the above elements from Philippians 4:8 present to enjoy. Even the Apostle Paul validated the positive and truthful points from of poetry from non-Christian sources. We see that in Acts 17:28. And he would have had to have read a lot of untruthful parts by those same poets to find and bring out the nuggets that he did. So we can't assume that we should always avoid entertainment that sometimes or even frequently promotes bad ideas. Notice in Philippians 4:8 the repeated use of the word "whatever" and the words "any" and "anything." God is the originator of all creative excellence, and every creative talent of every person in existence was brought about by God. Now, you know, we can choose to use those in ways that are twisted, but all those gifts are from, those gifts of creativity are from God. We shouldn't compartmentalize our appreciation of creativity to only Christian artistic endeavors as though gaming experiences like, you know, World of Warcraft or something owe nothing to God. I mean, whatever is commendable, Paul says, we can and should think about and then recognize God as the source. As James 1:17 tells us, "Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change." Whatever elements of goodness we can find in entertainment are gifts from God. They might be surrounded by some crap, but those elements of goodness are gifts from God. Secondly, the command in Philippians 4:8 instructs us on what we should think about, not what we shouldn't. I mean, the context there is about dealing with fear and anxiety and what we should be doing with that, you know. And so this is these verses are focused on, you know, what we should think about, not what we shouldn't. The meaning of this verse can't possibly be that we should never think about anything that is evil or terrifying. Otherwise, God wouldn't have spent so much time talking to us about evil in his words, and Jesus wouldn't have discussed hell so frequently with such vivid, terrifying imagery. Check out Mark 9:43, Matthew 5:29 and 30, and Matthew 10:28. We can't assume that entertainment should always be light and positive and leave us with good feelings without ever exposing and reflecting on the reality and nature of evil. I'd argue that depending on the mentality of the gamer, being evil in a game can be a means of actually obeying Philippians 4:8, as the sobering darkness of the experience can bring about reflection on things that are good and useful. Again, depending on the mentality of the gamer. So, engaging in entertainment with themes of evil can't be called sin in and of itself. I don't see how it can. But what about actually portraying evil with the choices you make as you play a game. Doesn't that mean that you actually want to do evil deep down in your heart? I think the person who accuses another of sinning in their mind because of the way they play a game has to carry the heavy burden of proof. Mind reading is not one of the spiritual gifts, so those accusations don't go anywhere useful until we have conclusive data that shows that a specific game activity leads to a specific sin result or increases the likelihood for it. Now, many studies have set out to scientifically link violent games to violent behavior or to anger, but to my knowledge, the closest we've come is to link them to aggression, which can come in both positive and negative forms. You can, you know, aggressively go out and do something that's good and productive just as much as you can aggressively, you know, do something that is selfish and counterproductive. Now, if we get conclusive data on this issue someday, obviously, I'll need to rethink my position. But so far, I don't see that happening. And as Christians, we want to operate our lives based on what is true, not on speculation. So as far as like linking violence and stuff like violence in games to violent behavior, there's the data is inconclusive and we're just left with a lot of speculation. So yeah, we want to operate based on what's true. That said, now, I think there are both morally right and morally wrong reasons, biblically, to be evil in a game. I'll go through the ones that come to mind right now. First, some reasons to be evil, quote-unquote, in a game that are not sin. These are reasons to be evil in a game that are not sin. The first one is to create enjoyable challenges for others or for yourself. If you're a game master, you know, like a dungeon master type thing, or an opposing player, choosing to be the bad guy is just one of two opposing roles in the game. You're not choosing that, you know, because you want to fantasize about being evil. You're just choosing it because it's an opposing role and it helps to create an enjoyable challenge for others and yourself. The theme or story attached to the experience is just irrelevant. You're just in it for the game. The same is true of a first-person shooter that you might enjoy for its challenge and controls, regardless of its story and theme, you know? The second reason to be evil in a game that's not sin is to benefit from the mechanical advantages that the game assigns to a specific evil action, an action that just happens to be quote-unquote evil in the context of the story of the game, but you are just taking part in it to benefit from the mechanics that are associated with that act. So, for example, many times killing in an RPG means you get experience and you get gold, which help you advance and get better equipment and better skills so that you can beat the next boss. Simple as that, you know? It's not that the player is, like, numb to killing. It's that they recognize that they are dealing with ones and zeros that hold together a set of game mechanics. These aren't people. They're polygons. Number three, third reason to be evil in a game that is not sin, is to satisfy curiosity. Sometimes we just want to know what's going to happen. Well, we wonder if the programmers have really anticipated that I might take a given action. You know, what's going to happen if I just, like, kill this person, you know? What might this evil choice and the game's reaction to it tell me about the game developer's views on good and evil? That's one reason I'm a person that I really like to try and examine, I guess, I'm probably misusing the term, but it's just the cultural zeitgeist, you know, when it comes to our views of good and evil. And oftentimes that's portrayed in our entertainment forms, you know, it's reflected, you know, whatever the popular view is reflected in our entertainment. And so that's one reason that I, you know, become very curious about how good and evil and stuff like that is treated in video games. And so that will sometimes cause me to make certain evil choices in a video game just to kind of see, okay, now what are the developers maybe saying in this game about, you know, doing this kind of evil action, you know? Or when playing with others, especially it's like a game master, you know, a dungeon master, we might make an evil choice just to see how the other players react. Now, provided it doesn't take away from their fun, because that can potentially take away from, I'm not recommending that, but if your players understand what you're doing and they're cool with it, that can add to the interest and excitement in a game to have a character that just sometimes does stuff that just kind of like push people's buttons, you know? And the fourth reason that comes to mind right now to be evil in a game of some kind without sinning is to create a specific kind of story. I think I've already demonstrated that dark stories are not inherently bad and can actually be very useful. Sometimes I like to create what in my mind is a cautionary tale, like this dark, sobering cautionary tale that's really just for me as I play an assassin who pledges themselves to dark gods in Skyrim, you know? I can make evil choices in games that sometimes are uncomfortable for me as a player. Even though I'm making them, I'm like, ooh, I do not feel comfortable with this choice. I recognize this is evil, you know, but I still make the choice for the sake of watching this kind of dark cautionary tale play out in front of me. Or maybe you're a game master and you want to create a great evil that's, you know, overcoming the land or, you know, whatever your game scenario is. But a great horrible evil that will be all the more satisfying for players to overcome the more threatening and horrific it is, and of course you want to be sensitive to your players and what they're going to be disturbed and sensitive to, you know. But I mean, I think if your players are okay with that and they're not like genuinely disturbed by what you're doing, it can make the triumph of goodness all the more bright and shining in that moment of victory as it overcomes the darkest of evils. I find that to be true in fiction, that the more horrific and disturbing the evil is, the more satisfying it is when that evil is defeated. Now, you can probably come up with even more reasons to be quote-unquote evil in a game that are not sin. Many times through a game, our reasons for making evil choices could change between any of these reasons or combine them together. I don't usually stick with just one of these reasons for making evil choices throughout a game. I'll find different reasons to make an evil choice in a given moment throughout especially in role-playing games, you know, that I'm playing. Sometimes it's like, oh, I want to tell a dark story, and sometimes it's, I just want the experience and the loot because, you know, I want to be ready to take on, you know, whatever's coming next. Humans are complex people, and assuming that we aren't and that a person plays an evil character for one or two specific reasons is both short-sighted and assumes the power to read minds. Okay, now all that said, I do think there are some reasons a person might choose to be evil in a game that could very well be sinful. So one reason to be evil that could be sinful is to vent or express anger. Now, naturally, it's better to go punch a pillow than chew somebody out, so this reason isn't sin by necessity, but venting anger through games is not the same as truly dealing with anger. If there's conflict we need to resolve with a believer, well, Jesus has told us how to do that in Matthew 18. If it's conflict with an unbeliever we need to resolve, then we've got to remember not to expect them to behave like a believer. If we're expecting that, we're just going to be more and more frustrated by their behavior, and it's, you know, our anger will never end. Instead, we ought to recognize, okay, they are not a follower of Christ. We shouldn't be expecting them to behave in a specific way, and we need to feel compassion for them while taking the grief that still remains to Jesus. Psalm 4:4-5 says, "Be angry and do not sin. Ponder in your own hearts on your beds and be silent. Offer right sacrifices and put your trust in the Lord." Proverbs 20:22 says, "Do not say, 'I will repay evil.' Wait for Yahweh, and he will deliver you." And Yahweh is the personal name of God that is intended when the Bible puts L-O-R-D in all caps there. And Romans 12:19-21, "Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God. For it is written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay,' says the Lord. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed them. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink, for by so doing you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." And sometimes anger is actually caused by anxiety, but Scripture tells us what to do with anxiety too. 1 Peter 5:6-7 says, "Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time he may exalt you, casting all your anxieties on him, because he cares for you." Anxiety mixed with pride, speaking personally, can become anger really fast. But we are to remain humble and unentitled, crying out our frustrations, fears, and pain to God. He loves us deeply, and he wants us to come to him in those times, not try to work everything out on our own or settle for temporary measures through a game fantasy. Philippians 4:4-9 says, I'm actually not going to quote that here. I don't have that written down. But that whole passage, 4 through 9, is one that I've been memorizing. And it's also useful, I think, in figuring out what to do with our anxious thought life. You know, I have some issues with anxiety sometimes, and so that's been really useful to me, Philippians 4 through 9. And of course, it's also useful to get help from a friend or talk to someone trained in helping with anxiety if it seems to be a recurring part of our lives. Okay, the second reason that we might choose to be evil in a game that could be sinful is to feel secure or powerful. Now, I don't see anything wrong, actually, with having a power fantasy. You know, that phrase is usually said in a negative context, but the Bible tells us that believers will one day be given new bodies that are glorious and powerful. 1 Corinthians 15, verses 42 and 43 tells us that. We will also one day be completely free of the destructive presence of sin that is so harmful and so discouraging to us now. We will be absolutely secure in the care of Jesus. And look at Revelation 21, 3 and 4 for more on that. Fantasizing about being secure and powerful can serve as a foretaste of our amazing eternal future. It can give us a hunger for that if we see it in that light. However, going to game experiences in an attempt to satisfy those desires can turn our focus away from God and reduce our desire to plead with God for his kingdom to come and for his earthly rule to begin. It's easy to ignore or become numb to the dark realities of the world by immersing ourselves in the fantasy of games and the feelings of power and security they can give us. You know, when you've had a rough day at work or you feel like people have just been overlooking you and mistreating you and you're just angry and you just want to go and just, you know, vent that anger and just kind of like destroy something, or you just want to feel secure and powerful and not like a freaking victim like you maybe feel all the time. So you go to a video game to kind of feel that. But really, video games are for entertainment. They're for enjoyment. When we are feeling those things, we should be taking those to the God who loves us, who's in control, who cares deeply for us. We should be looking to him for security and satisfaction. He wants us to come to him with those things. He wants us to weep if that's what we need to process in his presence, alone with him. If we get wrapped up in looking for satisfaction through entertainment, then we choke out potential for God's word to produce fruit in our lives as we long for and pursue him. You know, if we're longing for other things to satisfy us, then we're just going to miss out on what God has intended for us in a relationship with him. So for your consideration, I'd suggest Psalm 4, verse 5. Psalm 46, verse 1, Proverbs 3, 5, Isaiah 26, verse 4, Jeremiah 17, 7 through 8, and Matthew 13, 22. We also want to be careful that we're not being influenced by entertainment to depend on our own strength. You know, game fantasies can give us a sense of empowerment that we may take with us for a little bit after we're done playing. And while developing our confidence and improving on our strengths is useful, relying on them instead of God leads us away from God's will for us. And I think we see that in Isaiah 31, verse 1, and 1 Timothy 6, 17. And the third reason that comes to mind that we might choose to be evil in a game that could potentially be sinful is to socially dominate others. And I don't mean to dominate others in a game, in a competitive game. Obviously, you're trying to dominate other people in a game. I mean to socially dominate them as a part of that experience. You know, like outside of the game, to experience this feeling of dominance over another person. Even playing by yourself, fantasizing about socially dominating other people and feeling satisfaction from that doesn't seem to be in line with the teaching of Jesus that we ought to humble ourselves and serve others. That we see that in Philippians chapter 2, verses 5 through 8. And desiring to socially dominate other players, you know, gaining some subtle form of higher social status compared to them, like maybe we think in our heads, you know, I'm the true hardcore gamer here, you know, whatever. You know, even though it's just a game, we can say to ourselves, we can say to other people, hey, it's just a game, it's just a game, you know. I think if we are in our hearts desiring to have some kind of a subtle social status above other people around us, that's certainly out of line with the humility that we're commanded to have. So how can we tell when these things might be happening to us? In some cases, those close to you might be able to read you better than others, and let you know when they think you might be pursuing something harmful in your gaming. And we should try to be open to the observations of those who know us well. But much of the time, especially since mind reading is not a spiritual gift, we will have to be willing to repeatedly examine ourselves to determine whether or not we are engaging in mental activity that is harmful or sinful as we play evil characters in games. And that's so much of what I want Christian Geek Central and Spirit Blade Productions to be about. It's about, like, how can we as geeks learn to live uncompartmentalized lives, you know, bringing God into every part of our lives, including all of our geeky hobbies and stuff like that. Now, thankfully, the Bible gives us some help as we try to examine ourselves in the context of our gaming. Luke chapter 6, verses 43 through 45 says, "No good tree bears bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. Each tree is recognized by its own fruit. People do not pick figs from thorn bushes or grapes from briars. The good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart. And the evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart. For out of the overflow of his heart, his mouth speaks." Garbage in, garbage out is not a verse from the Bible. I've had that quoted to me before as if it was. What goes in does not necessarily come out. What we store up in our hearts is what comes out of us. That's what we produce. So when we or someone else recognizes sin in our behavior, we should ask ourselves, okay, what am I storing up in my heart? What am I believing or holding on to in my mind that has contributed to this sin? Of course, many times sin is hidden. It's just in our minds and it's unseen by others. So how can you tell what sin or harmful beliefs are stored up in your heart when they're not yet becoming visible to others around us? My first suggestion is to follow the model of the psalmist in Psalm 139. In verses 23 through 24, he says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." My second suggestion is to spend some regular time. This is something that I've done for a while. Maybe as part of your prayer or Bible reading time, quietly thinking about the types of sins you fall into. You know, what bad fruit are you producing? What beliefs about yourself, about others, or about God are motivating the growth of that bad fruit? What gameplay experiences are potentially validating those beliefs? Maybe your gameplay experiences get the all clear on that test, but maybe they don't and should be avoided. Whatever conclusion we arrive at, we should be willing to reevaluate that conclusion repeatedly, because there might be seasons of life where something is fine. This has certainly been true for me. Seasons of life where, like, one type of gaming experience is fine for us. It's healthy. Good things, God-honoring things come out of me interacting with that game and in the way that I am. But then in another season of life, it's like, oh man, I can't do this right now. I need to let this go and put this aside, get rid of it, or at least, you know, put it on the shelf for a long time. Wherever we arrive, we should be willing to also interact with other Christians about it while recognizing that there will be disagreement. So we shouldn't be shocked when someone has a different view than we do on some kind of entertainment we're taking part in. We should just be prepared for that reality. Possibly even more serious than our questions about games, the earliest Christians struggled over how to interact with harmful religions of their days. So they weren't talking about, like, boy, how do I interact with entertainment? So how do I interact with these other, like, belief systems that people are telling me this is real around me, you know? At the time the books of Romans and 1 Corinthians were written, Christians weren't sure if they should eat this leftover meat from pagan ritual sacrifices that when it was not, you know, when it was left over, it would just be sold in the marketplace. But yet there was evidently some way that they could tell this meat is left over from this, like, messed up ritual sacrifice that was going on nearby. Some believers thought it would be sinful to eat it. Others thought it would be fine and even honoring to God to eat it. So there was just this big dispute, and the Holy Spirit through Paul brought clarity to it. And he taught that nothing is unclean in and of itself. But if someone thinks something is unclean, they need to stay away from it. Presumably because engaging with it at that point would at least demonstrate a willingness to disobey God. For more on that, check out Romans 14, verse 14. Paul recognized that people had different opinions about this meat issue, just like people have different opinions on, you know, the games we interact with today and the ways we interact with those games. But Paul defaulted, through the Holy Spirit, defaulted toward freedom, the freedom that Christ gives us. And he even associated freedom in these matters as a sign of God-given strength. And we see that, I think, in Romans 14, verses 1 through 4. He also taught a combination, and this is important, I think, in all this. He taught a combination of sensitivity to others and the upholding of truth when it comes to controversies like this. We are not to silently just kind of give in and just kind of hang our heads and go, I don't know, maybe, or whatever, when someone calls evil what we consider good. But we're also to be sensitive to what potentially causes others to sin. We shouldn't flaunt that we have the freedom and strength to enjoy things that may cause others to sin, or encourage, and we also shouldn't encourage others to do something that, may cause them to sin. And I would recommend checking out Romans chapter 14, verses 13 through 23, and also 1 Corinthians 8, verses 7 through 13. For me personally, the way that one way that works itself out is that the only time I play a character in a way that is like seriously evil, like just in a way that I think is kind of disturbingly evil, rather than like humorously evil, you know, that kind of thing. The only time I play like a seriously disturbing evil character or make those kinds of choices in a game is when I'm just by myself and I just want to explore that kind of story or that kind of gameplay. We also shouldn't accuse and pass judgment on others who are able to enjoy something without sinning that may cause us to sin. And that's hard to do, to recognize that, oh, you know what, this might be about a weakness inside me, not a weakness inside them, you know. If we see a fellow Christian engaging in something that seems to be sin, we should talk to them about it, but without assuming that we're right from the get-go. And I know that's hard, because, you know, we've been taught to interpret Scripture in specific ways, as you know, throughout our lives, if we've been believers all our lives. But I think we still need to go into those conversations with the readiness to believe that, you know, maybe we have misunderstood something. I found it useful to start out those kinds of conversations or confrontations or whatever you want to call them with a question instead of an accusation. So, like, you know, instead of saying, don't you see that you're sinning as you do this, you know, or, you know, it seems like this is sin, or how can you call yourself a Christian when you do this, you know. Instead, I found it useful to start with a lighter question, like, you know, what are your thoughts on, you know, such and such, you know, such and such kind of sin or whatever, in light of, or such and such, like video games and violence or whatever, in light of this verse in the Bible. I think the Bible is important to bring into these conversations, because that's our common ground. I think as much as we can quote scriptures, we're talking about this, and quote it sensitively, not like in this, like, you know, kind of way. It's hard to control tone in comments, so be aware of that. Lighten up your tone with the words you use as much as possible when you're typing, because we can't hear tone. But anyway, with a question, I think that works better than an accusation. And by doing that, we may help them see some sin in their lives when we approach someone like that. But we should also be willing to consider that maybe there's a weakness in us that won't allow us to do what they are doing with God's approval. The entire chapters of Romans 14 and 1 Corinthians 8 are a great help the Holy Spirit has given us as we sort through stuff like this, so I would highly recommend you check those out with these issues in mind. Okay, so that basically wraps up my thoughts on that monster of a topic. I hope that's been useful to you as you consider playing an evil character in your next gaming session, or as you interact with someone else who chooses to do that. Hopefully we can interact sensitively and productively as we continue exploring this together. I'd love to get your thoughts and questions in the comments. You can also engage in this topic with some other folks at ChristianGeekCentral.com who would love to talk about it, I'm sure, with you as well. I hope you'll join us there soon as we continue to geek out together and seek the truth. Feedback, give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel. Anything else we're doing? What should we keep? What should we change? What's on your mind that you'd like I can never get through that part of my script. Let me practice that. What should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind that you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? Jeez. If you listen back, I think I stumble every time I get to the back half of that sentence. I should probably just rewrite the script. Anyway, despite the fact that it's a script, this is a real desire on my part and on our part, those of us that are involved in helping to lead Christian Geek Central. We want to make this show, we want to make all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we really have to hear from you to do that. That's how all this reflects what you're interested in and what you want to hear about. You can send me an email at paeter@spiritblade.net or contact Tim O'Donnell, our general administrator for Christian Geek Central, at ChristianGeekCentral@gmail.com. All right, let's see. Oh, I want to mention again that we're considering
There's a conversation going on right now at the forums that's leading, I should say, me to consider. I haven't really talked. We need to get together, you know, a few of us that are kind of involved in, you know, leading the Christian Geek Center as a whole. But the idea that I'm kind of wondering in my mind is whether or not we need to condense or combine boards on the forums to just kind of focus conversations and bring people together a little bit more and increase activity there a bit. Or maybe even, the idea is on the table, to move our community to Facebook. I mean, not change Christian Geek Central, but I mean like Facebook eventually instead of the forums or in addition to the forums or whatever. But I'd really like to hear from you on that. Maybe you haven't engaged with the community yet because you just tend to be on Facebook all the time. I want to hear that. That would help us make that decision. Or, you know, if there's some other reason that you don't typically engage with the forums, I want to hear that. Or if there's something you'd like the forums or the community to do better, we want to hear those things right now. I'm sensing that this is kind of a pivotal conversation that is really going to affect where the community is going in the future. So please go to ChristianGeekCentral.com and click on forums to join that conversation. Or if you're kind of shy and you want to just email me, that's cool too. PAETER@SpiritBlade.com. Let's see, what else? Oh yeah. I want to remind you guys to go and promote, if you would, the video that I just put up on YouTube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. About whether or not Christians can be evil in games. A while back, when I did my coverage on E3 and talked about the Doom video game, I definitely got some reactions like, how can a Christian be playing this and stuff like that? So I know that this is a topic that is out there, that's on people's minds, that a lot of people see this kind of inconsistency between Christians playing violent video games and dark-themed games and, you know, or board games that have dark supernatural themes or whatever. They see that as inconsistent with our faith and sometimes in anger and sometimes out of concern, want to call believers out on that. And this is a great opportunity to just get into the Word with people. And if that's kind of like, you know, intimidating for you to do, maybe, you know, that one of the reasons I like using YouTube now is I feel like this is a potential resource that I'm creating for you guys to use, that maybe you're like, oh, I don't want to like totally dive into that conversation, you know, just from, you know, just cold, but maybe this could be a conversation starter, or maybe, you know, you could just like it and share it and just say, hey, I'd be curious about your thoughts on this video, and just kind of let that, you know, kind of start a conversation or something. So really, I'm hoping these videos will be useful to you, and in particular, I'm wondering if this one will be useful to a lot of people. So go over to youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral and like and share that video, Can Christians Be Evil in Video Games? And let's just see what Yahweh does with that. And then, of course, if you want, you could subscribe while you're there, and that really helps also to draw attention to the channel and just kind of grow the ministry that we're trying to do there. And as always, guys, I want your voice and your interest to be a part of this podcast, Christian Geek Central. Whether you have an idea for a segment already or just want to be a part of the fun, we want to find a way to plug you in and let your voice be heard. And it's also a great way to promote what you're doing if you'd like. So for more info, please email me at PAETER@SpiritBlade.com. All right, that's it, guys. Stay tuned for Farscape Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 310 to start from the beginning. Next week, if God wants it to happen, Kim Wickie's going to be here with a review of the Crossover Alliance Anthology that I think you guys are really going to enjoy. And then I'm planning to give you my first impressions of the Mad Max video game releasing this coming Tuesday. Till then, check out SpiritBlade.com and Christian Geek Central for more stuff made just for you. Thank you guys so much for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Peter Frampson with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Prepare for immediate starburst.
So there we go, Farscape, episode 322 of season 3. What was the title again?
Oh, yeah, Dog with Two Bones.
You know, even though it's coming down off of the last episode, which is possibly the strongest episode of the entire series overall, there's still just some really powerful moments in this. And again, it's, you know, yet another episode that, like, just shows Farscape doing what other television didn't do and, by and large, still does not do. But this was an episode that was kind of a what-if alternate reality episode, but it was not on, you know, if this was Star Trek, this would be on the holodeck, and there'd be something wrong with the, you know, it would just be one of those types of things, you know. But here we see this kind of alternate reality presented, and it's all this recurring daydream, as it were, that John is wrestling with, these fears that he's having. He's trying to reconcile, how can I make, what is the happily ever after scenario? Is there a happily ever after scenario where I can live with my friends in peace and be back on Earth, you know? And he's seeing in his fears, as he's thinking about the scenario, he's concluding that this is never going to work. You know, it's not just a question anymore of, can I get home? It's looking like, with what he's learning about wormholes, that he will eventually be able to get home in maybe the not-too-distant future. But now the question that's occurring to him is, can I? And you hear that in the opening credits, you know, I mean, should I open the door, he says, you know, is it safe, you know, or Earth is not prepared for the nightmares that I've seen, or should I stay? But then you'll never know that they exist. You'll never know the wonders that I've seen, you know. So that's really the dilemma that he has now, is that it's looking more and more likely that he will be able to make it home. But then he sees this nightmare vision of what that could potentially look like, you know. And he's seeing all these different characters and how they would behave, how he imagines they would behave and adapt to life on Earth. You know, Chiana being like a kleptomaniac. Just being totally out of control, and Dargo kind of being, you know, just this womanizer, but at the same time, someone who feels like he totally does not fit in, and he's just in a rage over that, you know. And I think the way these characters are behaving in his fantasy sequences are not necessarily how they would behave in those circumstances, but they're John's idea of how they would behave, you know. So this episode is so stinking character driven, you know. And again, for me, I like character-driven stories, and on top of that, I don't care how brilliantly crafted your story is if it's not told in an engaging way, and that's a higher value to me than the story itself. Actually, I want it to be told in a way that's compelling, that makes me feel something, and this. This was told in a very compelling way, and it really made me feel something. Caught me off guard. I was in tears again as John was, you know, through this nightmare sequence, experiencing the death of all of his friends and culminating in the death of Aaron, who, of course, echoes John's lines. And we can ask questions about, like, well, why would that phrase come to mind for John? He wasn't there at the time that, you know, his other self died. And that, I suppose, could maybe feed into, you know, my personal, you know, view of that whole thing, is that they split in body, but their non-physical portion remained the same. And, you know, upon the eventual death of both Johns, then they would both retain the memories of their separate, you know, the one John would have the memories of both experiences united. So, you know, I mean, you could say there's some kind of maybe like a spiritual link between the two Johns, you know. In which case, you know, we could say that the other John didn't really die. I don't know. Anyway, that's a total rabbit trail, and I don't think that's what was intended by the writers, you know. But the point is, it doesn't really matter. The logic of that moment doesn't really matter because of, you know, what it means. What it meant when Aaron said, "Don't worry about me, I've never felt better," is that now the tables are turned, and John is experiencing, you know, to some degree, the death of Aaron and that the horror of that reality. So that at the end, when they're parting ways, she says, you know, "Guarantee you won't die in my arms again." And he just pushes her right back and says, "Guarantee you won't die in my arms," you know. And so anyway, just a wonderfully heavy episode, but also with some beautiful, beautiful moments. I mean,
some of my tears were not from the tragedy, but they were from the happiness of this happily ever after that was being presented in this episode of their wedding, and that just that beautiful, simple melody as they're dancing together, as John's dad says, you know, hey, son, can I cut in? You know, it was just this beautiful, happily ever ending, you know, and to the point where, like, if they were getting canceled, they could have recut this episode and presented this as the happily ever after, you know. And with the exception of their final season, they always thought they were getting canceled while they filmed the final episodes. But they still wrote these, you know, cliffhangers, you know. And anyway, that's kind of another thing. You can find all that interesting drama out from the behind-the-scenes stuff on the DVDs. Let's see here. Oh, we've got this old woman who is who has suddenly appeared, very Stark-like, where there's very little explanation for her presence. It is presented. It's very fleeting, though. She was on the command carrier as a prisoner, and John ordered that they go back to rescue this life pod that she apparently was on. He didn't know she was on it. John presumably just saw that there was a life pod that needed help, so they turned back, they helped it. And of course, none of that was in the previous episode, which is, you know, makes her sudden appearance all the more kind of confusing and strange. And it's weird because it's not set up in the previous episode. She just shows up. And that's kind of a running line through the episode, is who is that woman, you know? And you notice that she's still on the ship, you know? So we'll see how long she sticks around. But yes, we are looking at a new character, you know, that is not just in and out one episode. So this is, she's on the ship now. And so, you know, the intent of Farscape all along was that it be a revolving door, and the cast, the ensemble cast would change. And we've been seeing that, you know? So now as Stark departs, you know, maybe she's going to be filling some of that chaotic spiritualist Stark type role. I don't know. She's definitely mysterious at this point. This little anecdote is really not related to this. It's not any insight or reaction to this story, per se, but, it does say something about the kind of Farscape fan I am. When I was the worship pastor at our church for about 2 years, I stepped down from that position in 2006, September of 2006, to launch Spirit Blade Productions and give all of my time to that. You know, I'd been developing. We did the stage show like 2 years prior to that, when I was just before I had become the worship pastor. And so then during the time that I was leading the ministry, I was going home at night and working on the mix for the original mix of Spirit Blade. And I, you know, I had this passion and what I sensed was a calling, you know, to apply myself to do ministry to Christian geeks. And, that primarily at the time I thought would be through these audio dramas, you know, and of course it's turned into all kinds of other stuff as well since then. But anyway, I could see that it was, you know, over the course of these 2 years, I saw how, you know, once this product was ready to go out, it was going to be ready to go out at least I thought it was actually, yeah, I won't even get into that. I think I should have waited and spent about a year longer learning how to mix audio, but that's why I did the special edition in 2010. Anyway. But I was feeling like it was time to release it, you know, like it was done, or, you know, as done as it was going to be, to release it that September. And then I realized that I was going to have to give attention to marketing and figuring out how I was going to get it out there and get it in front of people and get it in people's ears. And then I already had plans to start developing a sequel and possibly make a trilogy, you know? And so I just suddenly realized that, oh my gosh, my workload for the Spirit Blade stuff was going to double. And at the same time, I saw that the ministry, although it was going in really good directions, and the elders were very supportive of the vision that I had for the worship ministry, and we all wanted to see that go forward. Not everybody. There was definitely some turmoil and some folks that were giving me trouble and making my life really hard. But that's a story for another time, I guess. But I just realized that because of, you know, well, because of the people that were making my life hard, it was going to require far more energy to move that ministry into the next phase of development that it would need to be in to continue going in the direction that that myself and the leadership of the church wanted to see it go in. And it was just going to be a tremendous emotional drain to start doing the work that needed to be done, to just kind of pastor and shepherd people, you know, further in the direction that we were going. I realized at that point, wow, suddenly the workload for both of these things on my plate are about to double, which means I only have room for one of them. You know, I wouldn't have any energy, any emotional or creative energy left. There was going to, you know, as we moved into the next, if I would have remained the worship pastor, the work that I would have had to do would have been so taxing and emotionally draining, I would not have anything left to come home and at night be working on Spirit Blade stuff. I wouldn't have that. I would have to let that go. And likewise, you know, I couldn't do both, you know. Because likewise, the Spirit Blade stuff, it wasn't that I needed to come home and just continue committing the amount of work to Spirit Blade stuff that I'd been. No, I was going to have to commit double the amount to that as well. So one of these things was about to swallow up my life whole full time, and there was going to be zero room suddenly for the other. And I came to the conclusion, as I wrestled through that and of course prayed through it and, talked to Holly extensively about it, you know, that I needed to step down from the worship pastor position because this other calling to minister to geeks, it got there first, you know, it had been with me first. It did, you know, and it's something I'd been drawn to for the longest time. And I always knew that being a worship pastor was going to be for a limited season. We thought it would be a longer season than 2 years, but, it ended up being a much shorter season than we anticipated. And so I was going to be gone, oddly enough, at a worship conference on, the Sunday that they wanted to communicate to the congregation, kind of this transition and what was happening. And so, and we had two services and they, you know, with stuff like this, they wanted to be sure that there wasn't room for like rumor mills and stuff. They wanted the communication to be really clear. And so the idea they came up with was for me to record a video of me talking with, I can't remember if it was our head pastor or another pastor I can't remember which one. But talking to them about my decision to step down and what that was all about and stuff. And as I talked over how to describe that with Bob, I brought up this metaphor of a dog with two bones that I learned. I don't think I told him it was from an episode of my favorite sci-fi show. But I gave this metaphor of a dog with two bones that John presents in this episode. If you're wondering how this all circles back to Farscape. you know, I basically said, if I try to go for the bone in the water, I'm going to drop the bone in my mouth. I'm going to lose them both, you know? And he really thought that was a good metaphor. And I think it's an old Southern metaphor probably, you know, I mean, knowing John Crichton as a character. So it's probably one that many others are familiar with, but I only knew it from this show. And so I used that, that metaphor to describe my decision to step down. And I've got that video. And at some point I'm thinking for maybe the 10th anniversary that, you know, it should be 2016 next year. Sometime during that year, I'll probably release that video on the YouTube channel or something and kind of share that with all you guys that are interested in seeing that just because it's a little bit of history, you know, of me kind of stepping down and moving into this phase of my life. So, but, Farscape helped to birth Spirit Blade Productions. All right. Well, that's it for now. This went way long. So that's the end of season three. And now we get into season four, which in some ways for me is a little bit of a letdown. But as I said over the years, I've grown to appreciate things that I didn't the first time around. And usually every time I get around to watching this show, even though the fourth season isn't like my favorite of the three, it's certainly not. I certainly think it's stronger than the first season, especially on repeat viewings. I think the fourth season is much stronger than the first season. But I usually just kind of gain some momentum at this point, because now it's like, okay, I want John and Aaron to be together, you know, and I want to see how this whole thing's going to end. And so I'm probably going to be binge watching the season four over the course of just the next couple of weeks. But anyway, there you have it. So next time we'll be back with Farscape season 4, episode 1, or it'll be 401, I guess.